Very good. Well, welcome to all those in the room and to those of you who dialed in on the line to the 2015 Heathrow results presentation. I'm John Holland-Kay. I'm the Chief Executive at Heathrow, and I'm joined here by Michael Uzielli, our Chief Financial Officer, by Andrew Effiong, our Treasurer, and Anne Hearn, our Deputy Treasurer. I'm just going to run through the operational highlights. That's the fun bit. And Michael is going to tell you that actually the fun is in the financials, which he's going to present. And then I'll just wrap up with the our strategic view. And I'm going to show a little video towards the end, which just is a look back on the last 70 years at Heathrow. So I will apologize in advance for those of you joining us on the line, because for copyright reasons, we can't show you the video. So you'll hear music for a few minutes while we just play that, and then we'll come back and open up the questions. And I'd just like to remind those following remotely, you can view the presentation through the link on the invitation or directly on the website. So let me just quickly run through the operational highlights. And my overall view, it's been a really fabulous year for us at Heathrow. We welcome more passengers than ever before, around 75 million passengers. So record traffic, but we also delivered the best level of passenger service we ever have done. In fact, we've delivered better passenger service levels than we did during the Olympics, which was a real big focal point for us just 4 years ago. So the Olympic experience that we worked hard to achieve is now pretty much business as usual at Heathrow, and our aim is to go beyond that. Financially, it's been a strong year. We're well ahead of our initial expectations for the year. Revenue is up to £2.8 billion, and EBITDA up to £1.6 billion. And we're starting to see the benefits of the cost reduction that we've been working on coming through, so particularly towards the end of last year. Michael will talk a little bit more about cost control later. We've also been able to take advantage of the very good markets, good for us as a corporate. In terms of funding, we've raised £1.2 billion last year. We've actually raised £400 million in the year to date, so we're still seeing some good conditions. And we have a funding horizon which takes us through to 2018, so we're in a very healthy financial position. And as we look into what may be quite a turbulent financial period, that puts us in a very robust position. Strategically, although this focus, whenever I'm talking to external media, is on expansion and what's happening next with expansion, our focus is on service transformation, making Heathrow not just one of the best airports in Europe, but one of the best airports in the world. So that is where we focus our energy. At the same time, we are continuing to take costs out of our business and work with airlines and retailers to improve income. But of course, in 10 years' time, we want to be operating an expanded Heathrow, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. So just looking back on last year in terms of what's been happening with traffic, we're quite resilient from a traffic point of view. We benefit from having a wide range of geographies that we trade with. We have very significant flows of passengers with North America and with Asia Pacific. As well as with Europe. We've seen growth in most of those areas, but some highlights I pick on, quite significant growth in Latin America. This is a big untapped opportunity for trade with the UK. We've seen the benefits of the new Avianca route into Colombia. We've also seen some significant growth in parts of Asia Pacific. Vietnam Airlines, who had been trying to operate out of Heathrow for many years, couldn't get slots. They went to Gatwick. That didn't work out for them. They were operating, I think, 4 days a week, often on an indirect basis. They've now moved to Heathrow. It's going well. And they're just moving up to a daily service operating on a direct basis. So that's a real benefit for the UK. And Garuda Indonesia will be doing the same move from Gatwick over the summer as well. And I'm sure that'll be a big success for them. So we're seeing good growth with some of those airlines. We're seeing more planes and more capacity on planes helping out. So more A380s now operating at Heathrow and more seat capacity on the European short-haul network as airlines such as British Airways put more seats into their planes. And most of those new seats are being filled up. So we're working hard with airlines to grow their business with us. And our expectation for this year is similar steady levels of growth, maybe about 1% to maybe just under 76 million passengers in the coming year. Now, that's a good, resilient and strong performance, but of course, other airports are moving ahead, being able to take advantage of the overall strong growth in North, South America and Asia. And we can see that with Heathrow, our capacity, we are continuing to fall behind. So you can see that all of the other major European airports have grown significantly faster than Heathrow. And in fact, Schiphol and Istanbul, two or three times faster growth than we have experienced. Madrid still recovering from the downturn that it had a few years ago. And globally, we've also started to see the cost of Heathrow being at capacity. We're starting to fall behind. And that is a good analogy for the UK starting to fall behind as one of the world's great trading nations. 10 years ago, we were the third largest in the world. And in fact, up until last year, we were still the third largest. We're now down to the sixth. And you can see how airports like Dubai have come from pretty much nowhere to now being the third largest in the world. Istanbul, who were at 48 10 years ago, are now at 11. And I'm sure that this time next year, they will have moved well up into the top 10. So this is really an indication of what we're missing out on. And there is massive untapped demand at Heathrow. I've got 30 airlines who want to either expand their business with us or come into Heathrow that can't operate from it today. And you might have seen recently that Oman Air, who couldn't get a slot any other way, paid $75 million for a peak hour slot pair at Heathrow. That is an extraordinary indication of the pent-up demand there is to operate out of Heathrow. And that is one of the things that shows just what a strong business case there is for expansion. But coming back to service, we're now regularly in the top quartile of European airports as judged by passengers. We have moved well ahead of our European hub competitors, Paris, Charles de Gaulle, and Frankfurt, Schiphol, and Madrid. We've worked hard on departures punctuality. We've had a lot of headwinds, quite literally, last year. Not just weather, of course, but also increasingly congested skies over Europe. And A380s, while they bring more passengers, they also need bigger gaps between A380s coming into land. And that's been a challenge to punctuality. But I'm pleased that we've been able to maintain the highest level of punctuality we've ever had. We're working on improving that. And that's helped us to improve the performance of our baggage system. And so better punctuality this year and better resilience in the baggage system should be driving down to really world-class levels in the baggage system. So service transformation is partly about the investment we've been making. It's partly also about our investment in people. So the kind of things we've been working on this year, we have 30% more security capacity in Terminal 5 alone. And I hope you'll have seen that if you've been traveling through, you're getting through more quickly. It's more common now to see lanes not open because we've got more capacity than we need. That's a good sign because Terminal 5 only gets busier year by year. We've got five times as many e-gates in immigration than we had this time last year. We're still completing the e-gates in Terminal 4 and Terminal 3. So there'll be a little bit of congestion while we do that because we have to take space out to do it. But that really will speed things up through the border. And we opened the new business fast track in Terminal 5 last year. That's a really symbolic change, focusing on getting each kind of passenger through the terminal more quickly. We've been doing a lot to improve resilience, investing in new stands and taxiways so that A380s can get around the airport more quickly. We've pioneered time-based separation, which has helped to improve punctuality. And we now have APOC, our Airport Operations Center, fully working. So we've got much better control and visibility over what is happening across the airport. And that's making a much tighter ship. We've also put a lot of energy behind our environmental agenda. We've been a pioneer and a world leader in sustainability for well over a decade. But we've been pushing this much harder this year. And the kind of things we've been doing are working through our control center to reduce the number of night flights that we have. So the unscheduled late-running flights, late-running departures reduced by 15% last year. That's a big improvement for local communities. We've replaced pretty much all of our old lights with new LEDs. That has a big energy saving and, of course, a cost saving. And we're progressively converting all of our diesel vehicles on the airport over to electric. And it's the leadership that we've taken in these kinds of areas that has given us the confidence to be the first and only airport in the world to have signed up to the Paris Pledge for Action on climate change. It's important to us that we take a global lead, not just within our sector, but elsewhere, in doing the right thing. So I'll now hand over to the fun part of the financials with Michael, who will take you through a bit more detail.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a real pleasure to present my first set of annual results at Heathrow. And as John said, it has been a strong year financially. We have seen EBITDA up 3%, that's 46 million to 1605 million, with revenue up 2.7%, driven by traffic growth, 75 million passengers, that's a 1.5 million or so increase on last year, 2.2%, but also an increase in retail income per passenger, quite significant, just over 6%, just over £7.50. So good growth on both aeronautical revenues, but also more growth, actually, on retail revenues. And we've also seen strong cost control with, as John said, the measures that we have been taking over the last couple of years starting to take effect. First half of the year, we saw our costs up year on year by 5.5%. Second half of the year, they've been broadly flat. And in the fourth quarter, they're actually down 2.2%, 2.4%. So overall for the year, we're down just over, we're up just over 2%, but we're on a declining trend. But we expect that to continue into next year. From a balance sheet point of view, you'll see from the slide that we saw modest RAB growth, just 0.4%. This is a result of low inflation. So RPI was 1% on average last year, whereas 2014 was 2.4%. Typically, as you'll know, it's been more like 2 to 3% over the years. And also, of course, lower capital expenditure, down 27% year on year. So overall, a small amount of RAB growth, but we have retained strong gearing ratios. We retain our 5% buffer, so we're comfortable with that from a gearing perspective. And we do, of course, continue to generate very strong operating cash flow. So turning to revenues, total revenues, 2765, that's up 2.7% or 73 million on 2014, with aero revenues up 1%. What we saw is revenue growth from volume, about 40 million, but that was offset by primarily the non-recurrence of 50 million K factor recovery in 2014. On the retail side, however, we've seen overall retail growth of 8%, 8.4%, with retail per passenger revenue up 6.2%. And what we're seeing here is the result of significant investment, primarily in areas such as luxury retail in Terminal 5. John talked about that earlier. Also, services income, such as car parking. We now have got 7 car parking products, and we opened a new business car park in Terminal 5 during the year, which was an extra 800 spaces. We also have seen very good growth in the VIP service, which is up 50% in terms of revenues. And this is a valuable new revenue stream which has developed over recent years. And finally, something we haven't maybe talked about so much, but we have a very significant number of members in our Heathrow Rewards program, 1.2 million. We've been investing in our digital capabilities. We relaunched Heathrow.com. We relaunched a new Heathrow app that has 500,000 downloads. So this is an area that we're increasingly investing in and will help drive our retail revenue going forward as well. So the outlook for 2016 would be for continued revenue growth, modest passenger growth, around 75.7 million passengers. That's up 700,000, 1%. We will see falling charges, aeronautical charges. Aeronautical charges were lower in 15 and 14, and they'll be lower in 16 and 15, again, a result of a low RPI environment. However, we'll see the full-year benefit of the new stores. We're investing in Terminal 5 again in food and beverage, Terminal 4, independent lounges, etc., and then innovation across revenue streams, digital, telecoms, and other initiatives to fill the empty seats, for example, on Heathrow Express, and also working with our airline partners to help them increase their volumes as well. Overall, from a revenue perspective, our Q6 target, as you probably know, is 270 million. Of enhanced revenue. We're on track for that. We've achieved 150 million so far, and that's increased by 50 million during the year. Moving on to costs, total costs up 2.4%, as I said, 27 million to 1160, but on a downward trend. And actually, our underlying costs in the year, strip out the impact of at the close of Terminal 1, opening Terminal 2 and the new baggage facility and the 20 million or so that we spent last year on expansion planning. If you strip that out, our underlying costs even last year were flat on the prior year. But as I said, we'll continue to see our costs fall into 2016. We've implemented a whole range of initiatives on the people front, which is about 35% of our total costs. That's from support service and head office restructuring to changes in frontline. Around 350 of our colleagues have taken advantage of voluntary severance package, and that's enabled us to recruit on new starter terms and conditions, which are around 30% lower than other packages that we have. And as we've also renegotiated pretty much all of our supplier contracts, some of the big ones that we talk about are NATS contracts, as a five-year strategic partnership there, but also baggage, cleaning, really across the board. And finally, we closed Terminal 1 slightly earlier than planned last year, so that gave rise to an additional cost saving. Going forward into 2016, we'll see the benefit of initiatives such as the change in pensions that we made last year. We'll see that flow through. We'll see further initiatives in workforce and in energy costs. John talked about the light bulbs. Obviously, there's also lower global energy prices and other energy efficiency initiatives. So taking that all together, we'd expect our operating costs next year to fall in absolute terms, but also on a per passenger basis. And going back to the settlement, the equivalent number for operating costs was 600 million over the five-year queue. We're on track for that. We've banked 450 million. That's up 170 million since last year. And what we thought would be interesting, just to quickly talk about one area, this is a new slide, just to give a little bit more detail on the operation. So this is our security operation. 3,700 of our colleagues work there. That's about two-thirds of the total workforce directly employed by Heathrow. And you'll see here the progress that we've made on both improving service and improving efficiency, cutting cost all at the same time. So 2% higher passenger volumes last year. We saw a better flow rate, so that's the number of passengers going through security per hour, that increased by 13%. Service quality, which is the score given to us by passengers, up 2% to 4.11, which is a record high, and at the same time, cost per passenger reducing by 13%. So we've seen shorter queue times, more satisfied customers, and lower costs from a range of initiatives, some investing in capacity, additional lanes, parallel loading, etc., some around changes in, say, rosters or fixed posts, and then some improvements in the customer experience overall. So there'll be more of this to come, but that's just an example of how it is possible to both improve the passenger experience and service and also operate more efficiently. So turning on to the more sort of directly financial matters such as cash flow, we've seen continued strong cash conversion at Heathrow, around 99% of our EBITDA coming through as cash flow. As I mentioned earlier, we've had lower capital expenditure during the year. We've had slightly higher interest paid, but overall positive cash flow after capex and interest payments. And in fact, operating cash flow almost covers all of our outflows, with the exception of debt maturities. And we'd expect this to continue into 2016. And then, as I mentioned earlier, from a gearing perspective, despite the low RPI environment, we do remain well within our triggers and covenants. We maintain a 5% buffer to our covenants. So in the case of Heathrow Finance, for example, 90%, so just over a 5% buffer at the year end. That's around £750 million of buffer. And we expect to operate at similar levels through the year. We'll of course, monitor RPI closely as we see through the year. And then from a financing perspective, John mentioned earlier, we took advantage of positive market conditions, certainly in the first half of last year, to issue around £1.2 billion overall last year. But that really had the effect of extending our average maturities and diversifying our sources. We have two bonds, a €750 million bond in February and a $500 million Canadian dollar bond in May. We also issued $400 million in combination of private placements and bank loans. To date, in 2016, we've raised $400 million, and we expect our financing requirements in 2016 to be a little bit less than $1 billion. And again, as John mentioned, we do remain in a robust position from a liquidity point of view. We've got £2.7 billion of overall liquidity in terms of facilities and cash. That includes £1 billion of cash, and that extends our liquidity horizon to January 2018. So just to sum up, in terms of the outlook, 2015 was obviously a strong year, really across the board for Heathrow, financially, operationally, from a service perspective, and we would expect 2016 to build on this strong performance. I think we would expect to see slightly busy passenger growth, a slightly slower passenger growth, consequently slightly lower revenue growth this year, but with lower aeronautical, with a slower growth in aeronautical revenues, partially offset by continued strong growth in commercial revenue. From a cost point of view, we'll continue to focus on strong cost control with the flow through of existing initiatives, new initiatives that we've planned, and that should reduce our operating costs by about 3%, leading to a forecast EBITDA for the year of 1.67 billion, which would be 3% up year on year. So with that, I shall hand back to John to talk about the strategic update.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. That's terrific. And so let me just take you back. When I took over as chief executive 18 months ago, I set out my vision of making Heathrow the best, delivering the best airport service in the world for passengers, and set four priorities internally. The first was engaging with our people, making Heathrow a great place to work, which I call Mojo. The second is transforming customer service, which we get through engaging with our people. The third is beating with the plan. So if we're delivering better service, getting more people through, we will help to grow our revenues. And the fourth is winning support for expansion. So what we've been doing this year, some we've touched on and some we haven't. But from a Mojo point of view, we've made really good progress. We have very high levels now of engagement with our people. 75% of people who work at Heathrow rated as being a great place to work. And one of the external measures we're working on is the best companies measure, which is done annually as an external benchmark. And we're really pleased that in our first year we've been rated as one to watch. We want to be rated one star next year. One of the things I'm keen to do is to tap into the talent we have within our business. We have many really enthusiastic, passionate, smart people who can do more. So we've been putting a lot of talent programs in place to get good people to come into the business at all levels and then develop them. And an indication of that is we had 195 of our security officers were promoted into new roles in management roles last year. And some of them will be the backbone of our future management team, a really smart, capable people. We've launched a partnership with the Duke of Edinburgh Award. It's their 60th anniversary this year. And we want to use this as a way of engaging with local schools and communities to attract, to help to develop local people, but also draw them into our business. As many people from local schools will come and work for us one day, and also use it internally to try to give people a chance to do something differently. We set up a challenge ourselves. We had three choices that we got the company to vote on as to what the leadership team were going to do. One of which was cooking them lunch in the canteen. One of them was going on a three-day hike across mountains, and a third one was abseiling down Terminal 5. You can guess which one they went for. They didn't want us cooking them lunch. They did want us to throw ourselves off a cliff. So this morning, I and my colleagues abseiled down Terminal 5, which was not the thing I would have chosen to do, but it's a good example of the Duke of Edinburgh getting people of all ages in its 60th year to try something different. And through that and a number of other things, we'll be raising a lot of money as well as engaging with local people and our own community with Duke of Edinburgh. So coming up this year, we'll have our 70th anniversary. I'll talk about that in a moment. We're introducing flexible benefits to make it easier for people to fit work at Heathrow with their lifestyle. We have the benefit of operating 24/7. That means that it's easier to fit around school days and commitments elsewhere. So that's a real benefit to our colleagues. And we're doubling our investments in well-being. That's things like health checks for people across the airport and fitness opportunities. I can tell you my pulse was certainly racing after I slipped over the edge of Terminal 5 this morning. Transforming service, we've talked a lot about what we've done. There's a lot more to come. By Easter, we will have the new transfer link working in Terminal 5. That will mean that there will be less congestion in the north side of security, which will smooth up the transfer journey for transfer passengers at the heart of the hub, but also for you as direct passengers leaving the airport. We will also, for the first time, be introducing a direct access from first class. This might appeal to some of those in the room or on the call. We'll have a first class access direct from check-in into the first class lounge in Terminal 5, something people never thought that we would do, that we are doing because it's the right thing to do. We'll complete the Terminal 3 integrated baggage system. That's working very well. That'll help to smooth transfers of baggage, make us a better, more efficient hub, reduce disconnects and reduce costs. And we're increasing our investment in training of our people by 50% this year and making sure that we've got really good service skills. We've talked a bit about beating the plan. We're just out to vote with our unions on a three-year pay deal, which has been supported with the unions. That'll give us good visibility and confidence in the overall payroll costs. We'll keep on refurbishing the airport, so we've got the Terminal 4 departure lounge is just starting to be developed, and that will improve services for passengers. And we're working with the airlines to try to fill empty seats. And so we've done a lot of work this year with British Airways and Virgin and a number of other airlines to do so, and that's encouraging. We're in a very strong position in terms of expansion. Only 3 years ago, we were out of the game altogether. We are now the front runner from the Air Force Commission. The government has the policy support to back Heathrow expansion. Clearly, things are going to be a little bit quieter while the EU debate goes on. But we want to push for a quick decision after that, which is what the Secretary of State has said he wants to do. He wants to have a decision by the end of July when the House of Parliament rises for the summer. So we can keep on working with government, airlines, local communities, continuing to build our environmental leadership. We'll be making some comments on that in March or April and pushing for that summer decision. So before I close up, I'm just going to show a little video which one of our colleagues put together, which just looks back on the last 70 years at Heathrow, which is quite fun. So I will apologize to those on the line. You'll have about 3 minutes of music, so just time to go and get yourself a drink, and then come back and we'll open up for questions.
Hello, this is the operator. While we're waiting for the music to finish, if you have any questions, just press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad, and we'll take those questions after the questions from the floor. And if you want to retract that question, just press 0 and then 2, and we'll go back to the music now. Thank you.
the lines again. And that's just something we put together internally to look back on the last 70 years. And we'll be doing a celebration in May for our 70th birthday. But when I first saw that, it was really striking when you see the juxtaposition of old army tents going onto world-class terminals like 5 and 2 and people walking across the tarmac being replaced by these fabulous facilities at Heathrow. There are two things that have not changed in the last 70 years. We still have two runways. And we have squeezed so much out of those two runways for so long, going from a few hundred thousand passengers to 75 million passengers. But we've come to the point where we just cannot do any more. It's time that we need to move on and give them the capacity that we need at our hub airports to do the things that we can do. And you'll be familiar with the arguments, but this is really why the Air Force Commission came out and backed us. Much greater economic security, more exports, with the UK's biggest port by far, over a quarter of the UK's exports, helping the UK to get to emerging markets, not just for London and the South East, but for the whole of the UK, with more regional links coming in. The government has the benefit of a strong policy basis with the Air Force Commission. And, of course, we have a good record of doing this kind of thing. With your help, we have rebuilt Heathrow in the last 10 or 12 years, doing all the things we will need to do in the next 10 years to create a real world-class hub airport. And one thing that tends to get overlooked, we will be right at the heart of the UK's transport network, not just the five motorways we have today, but five railway lines from north, south, east and west. That is really transformational for getting people into the airport without having to get into their cars. And, of course, the government has the confidence of the huge support that we have built up. The majority of our local communities and a significant majority of MPs from all the major parties. This has real cross-party backing. And the local community support is really significant. There's a real prize to expansion that local communities recognise, not least the 40,000 new jobs at the airport and 10,000 apprenticeships. Massive backing from business, from unions, and from the major employer groups, and of course from airlines. Not only do we have the 30 airlines who want to expand the Heathrow, all the major UK airlines, Virgin, BA, EasyJet, Flybe, have all chosen Heathrow as being the right place to expand. That just underlines the strong business case that we have. And, of course, support from regional airports because they want the regional connections into the UK's hub airport. So the business case, of course, is overwhelming. But what the Air Force Commission showed is we can also do it in the right way. We can do it sustainably. And the fact that we can expand within climate change targets, within air quality targets, and with fewer people impacted by aircraft noise has been validated externally. So the government can have it both ways, the best economic solution and a real sustainable hub airport. So that is why I think the government will back Heathrow expansion when we come to it. I've been asked a lot in the last 24 hours about our views on the EU. You may have seen them. And our view is a simple one, that we are, as the UK's biggest port, we support free trade. We can see the benefits of that. And it's important for the UK to stay part of the biggest free trading group in the world. There are real benefits for that. And I've also talked about the benefits we get in aviation from being part of the single market. We all see that with the cost of flights, which is so much lower than it was 30 or 40 years ago, largely as a result of the European Union opening up a free market in aviation. All of us benefit from that, whether you're going on a stag night or whether you're going on business to another part of Europe. So there's a real prize there that we get. And there are also other prizes from being part of a single sky, which is another big project the European Union is working on, which will cut delays in flights, cut the cost of flying, and it will cut the emissions from flying by allowing planes to fly in a direct line. So real benefits from EU membership. But fundamentally, it comes down to we are free traders, and we want to be internationalists, and not just trade with the long-haul markets, the Heathrow helps us to get to, but also to be able to trade easily with our European partners. So that's all I wanted to cover. I'll just open up the questions in the room, and then I'll go on to the line for further questions. So can I ask for any questions? I think we've got some microphones, and if you could give your name and organisation, that would be terrific. I'd like to have at least one question. It just gives us some comfort. Andrew, thank you.
Thanks, John. I'm interested in your comment on the A380 and the flight separation, because I think it's from the outside, you know, we think more A380s is better for traffic numbers. Is there a sort of a threshold point at which actually you don't want, like, almost a capacity point for your A380s, because you start to lose the number of air traffic movements you can clear through the airport, or as a practical matter, you some way from that tipping point?
Well, you're right. There is a point at which you would come to a threshold. We're some way away from that at the moment, but we have to work quite hard to manage it. And as you will understand, the challenge is you can't have a small plane coming in close after a large plane, so you need to leave a large gap between them. And of course, as a hub airport, we need a balance of small and large planes. We typically have two small planes for every one large plane. So we've got to have a good mix, and there's only so much separation you can do. So at the moment, we're able to manage it very well, and it is a huge achievement by NATS and our airside team that we can maintain the levels of punctuality we have been maintaining. I of course, have much higher targets for the punctuality I'd like us to achieve, because everything flows better when it flows on time. So I want to be well into the 80s, 80% of punctuality, and that's what we're working on. But I think we're coming to a point where in the next couple of years the A380 penetration will start to level off at Heathrow, and then we'll be able to build on that. Thanks. Thank you. Any other questions in the room? Well, should we just open up on the lines to any questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't already and you're on the phones and you wish to ask a question, please do press 0 and then 1. On your phone keypad now, and press 0 and 2 if you wish to cancel that. And we have a brace of questions already, and the first appropriate number is from James Sparrow at BNP Paribas. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, James.
Yes, hi. Afternoon, everyone. A couple of questions. Just firstly, on the thorny subject of Brexit, I appreciate your comments on why you'd like the UK to stay in, but just be intrigued to hear what your initial thoughts might be on the implications for Heathrow as a business and a credit if the UK were to leave. I appreciate it's a very open question, but any initial thoughts would be great. Also, secondly, just with regards to your gearing, just kind of intrigued to know whether how the kind of third runway decision or lack of might be affecting that, and if, you know, if the issue is kicked into touch again later this year, whether you might potentially be prepared to take gearing up a little bit. Thanks.
Great. Two good questions. I'll cover the first one, and Michael, perhaps if you can come in on the gearing question. So in terms of Brexit, my assumption as to what would happen if the UK were to vote to leave the EU is that we would have a prolonged period of uncertainty with volatile markets and a very unclear regulatory situation in terms of the EU rules. And I think we've seen some of that just in the last 24 hours with the way that exchange rates have moved. And I don't think that's welcome for any business. It'll make it harder for businesses to make commitments on capital investment, on where to locate for inward investment. None of that is good because, as you will know, business needs certainty. And that's exactly what we wouldn't have over the next few years. From our own... and I'm sure that there would be a point at which things would stabilise and we'd be into a new normal. I think from our point of view, the Heathrow business, as you know, is very resilient. We've weathered some very tough economic storms over the last few years. I don't think that we would be significantly impacted by that. Of course, we're exposed to fluctuations in the financial markets. And that's one of the reasons why we have taken a prudent view with our liquidity, and they're in a strong position, and we'll continue to make sure that we are protected so that if markets do tighten up at any time, we aren't exposed to that. So I think Heathrow will be in a robust position. Ironically, if the UK were to exit, the need for Heathrow expansion would be even greater, because the alternative for economic growth that people look to is to go to global markets, all of which are the long-haul markets that Heathrow serves. And the lack of capacity Heathrow would become a real crisis, and we'd need to get on and deliver that as quickly as possible. Now, my argument is this shouldn't be an either-or. We should be doing both. We should get the benefits of being a real global powerhouse while having exposure to the the large free market we have on our doorstep in Europe, rather than having to choose between the two. So it might be in our selfish interests to vote out, but actually I think it's in all of our long-term interests to stay in the reformed European Union. Michael, do you want to pick up on the gearing question?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, James. So I think there's two questions. We had a question about gearing around strengthening, or that would, how our gearing attitude towards gearing would change if we didn't have expansion. So to take the one first, I think we've been quite clear that expansion, we would seek to be maintaining our existing strong investment grade ratings, and that is, you know, we would expect the expansion to be funded out of the existing RAB and basically continue with our existing investment grade ratings. If we, for some reason, were not proceeding with expansion or if it was somehow delayed, I don't see any kind of major change to our approach to our gearing, which is to have this 5% buffer to our covenants. Clearly, one of the risks to our gearing levels is the low levels of RPI. We're protected to that to some extent because around half of our debt is, as you'll know, is index linked. But actually, in our investor report that we put out in December, we forecast the Heathrow Finance gearing to be 84.7% for the end of this year. It was 84.9% to the end of 2015. So the short answer is we wouldn't be changing our overall approach to gearing if there was some sort of delay to expansion. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I mean, there's very clear, helpful answers. Thanks. Just one more, just out of curiosity, just on the FX impact of sterling depreciation, I just wonder if you could comment at all on that. Thanks.
On terms of our operating business?
Yes.
Financing.
Financial impact.
Well, obviously, from a financing point of view, we've hedged everything back into sterling, so there's limited impact there. But from an operating point of view, I mean, it sort of swings and roundabouts on this stuff. Typically, within the retail business, a stronger dollar or euro can be somewhat beneficial to retail income, simply because the proposition is, you know, more appealing for visitors from abroad. So it can have a slightly beneficial impact. On the other hand, there are lots of other things that also affect retail income around GDP growth, and actually things just like the layout of the terminals or whether we're refurbishing something, etc. So it's sort of in the mix, and it's in all of our econometric models. Mildly beneficial, but I wouldn't say it's overly material.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Was there another question on the line?
Yes, there are two more questions currently. The first is Alex Yanis at PIMCO. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. You have a bond maturing in late March, March 31st. Should we be expecting a new issue?
So, yeah, you're right. We do have a bond maturing soon. As I said, we expect to raise something under £1 billion further this year. We've raised £400 million already. As you probably know, we issued a Swiss bond recently, and we also raised some Heathrow Finance money as well. So we're looking at our different options. We have, as I said, £2.7 billion of liquidity, so we're not in a tearing rush. But we historically have looked at, you know, the benefit of our financing structure is we have six currencies, we have different levels of the capital structure. We've raised money in the public bond markets, also private placements and banks. So, you know, we'll just review our options. We're very focused on relative value in terms of our funding options. We also seek to be repeat issuers in markets as well. So I can't give you a definitive answer on that, but I think that we are, you know, looking at all options. But I don't know if Andrew, you want to add anything to that.
No, I mean, that's fine.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Finally, if anyone has any further questions, please press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now. At this stage, there are no further questions on the phone, so back to you for any closing thoughts.
Fabulous, thank you. And I just want to thank you all for your time today, and thank you for all your support over the last year and hopefully ongoing. We really appreciate the support of our bondholders in the financial markets, and it's helping us to deliver a good, steady, reliable growth in the business, and help us to give passengers the best airport service in the world. So thank you very much.
This now concludes today's call. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.